My house stands with an air of confidence that is most noticeable in its situational serenity. My house is confident because God is confident. My house, from property line to property line, is my shalom place and even includes our dream space under God's exclusive domain, even when we sleep. Where we live should be like a soft face with intelligent cheekbones, a golden ratio nose, trimmed brows and defined chin, complemented by its easy, charming, metaphorical smile. There should be wondrous clean glass, the windows being the eyes of our house, staring out in curiosity as if about to break out in smiles all over at anyone who visits. The yard, groomed, cropping the place we live. At our house, where I live, the land behind the house and behind the barn spills down between two rolling green hills. Past that, it levels out to a shady, cascading creek, which appears like a beautiful idea, serene and quiet, a hidden treasure which you'd have to purposely look at in order to see it. Where do you live? Is your house a reflection of you, or is it a reflection of who you wish you were? Maybe it's a reflection of who you wish you weren't, or a reflection of someone else. I heard someone say they were praying for dominion over evil spirits once, but I figure it all like Joyce Meyer says, it would be better to start by having dominion over that sink of dirty dishes, the carpet which needs vacuuming, and those dirty clothes which need washing, folding, and hanging up first. I believe those are very telling details of where you live, which are like outward illustrations of your inner life. Where do you live? What does your house reflect about you? Overall, the general shape of our lives can be seen in the place where we live. I'm Social Porter, and this is Outposts, a semi-live broadcast of cool jazz and contemplative conversation from the late evening cascading banks of the Ocklawaha River, where the fireflies are putting on a spectacular show for us tonight, and every evening is pleasant. So stay with me this evening for the brief discussion of where do you live? What are your foundations, walls, and roof made of? It may look like you, but does it reflect the real you? Relax and breathe, and I'll be right back. Years ago, I met a fellow who seemed to really have it all together. You know, one of those people you can't help but like. From where I was standing, to me, he appeared as a diligent believer. He spoke often of how he fasted and read his Bible. Many times he spoke of mighty things in Christ. Then the more I began to spend time with him, the more I noticed flashes of chaos. I'm not saying I don't have grace for being human, But this was way over the top of the general chaos of being human. There was an increased chaotic splash here, the mental and emotional bedlam there. There were unsettling and increasing signs of his really being disconnected and disjointed. The more we spent time talking, the more I heard a jumble of misperceptions and unresolved thinking. Sadly, it dawned on me that he was someone far different on the inside than who he presented himself to be. His presentation face, which he worked very hard on, and his real face gave away the condition of where he really lived. There was an obvious difference between his what I call presentation face and his real face. One day, I went with him to his work truck, and there, to my complete surprise, was the most radical mess I had ever seen. In the moment, the Lord spoke to me, saying, "This is his life. This is his house. This is how he thinks and lives. The condition of his truck is a representation of who he really is and how he considers the world around him." Then the Lord asked me a question. "Where do you live?" The Lord wasn't opening my eyes to see all about the other guy. He was opening my eyes to know more about myself. The seeing wasn't about him, but about me. You know, it's real easy to find out about other people, but yet we have such a hard time being honest about ourselves. And we can be honest and transparent, but without being vulnerable for others whom we trust to speak into our lives, we are just the same old brick wall everyone else is. Rather than dwell on who my friend was not, I began to think about who I was, who I thought I was, and who I wanted to be. Did I wear a presentation face which was radically different than who I really was? Did my character match my conscience? And would they know each other if they met on the street? How far apart was my presentation face from my real face? Those were questions to myself of which the answers were far beyond any tools I possessed to analyze with. Those were God questions requiring God answers. I think the Lord poses us questions like that in order to build a vision of possibilities. And when we share with others that knowledge of His vision of possibilities and allow them to particularize themselves to us, it's called common ground. It's where we relate to God and where we relate to others and them to us. My friend, consider to yourself, how do you relate to God? Now you can say all the standard answers of relating to God through prayer or His Word, but consider it again. Yeah, it's a pretty pondersome sort of question. It seems He is far above and we are far below. So how do we reach someone like the Lord? Or is the truth more that if He doesn't connect with us, we will not connect with Him? How is your house? You say you have a roof, but your rafters aren't all in place. And we all know a roof with no rafters could easily just be called a tent. A roof with no rafters will come down in a storm. Or is your house like a movie set, full of props and poses? Though pretty enough, they're just not real. Where do you live? Thank you. of course, this is all a bit metaphoric, but still, the following posed questions are good ones, even if for no one else but myself. But first, let's talk a little about the idea of details, something most of us are not good at. A detail, according to the way the word is used in Colossians 2:18, means to approach something with a view to examine closely. The word is the picture of someone approaching an object and doing more than simply identifying what the object is and how it works, but to get closer, so much closer, to understand the inside workings and why the object or concept of our inspection functions as it does. The Old Testament version of the word means to closely inspect something, taking note of its interaction with everything else. It's a picture of someone looking very, very closely at cross stitch or embroidery. In light of that, how are the details of your house ordered? Are the books neatly set on a shelf of sorts? Are the windowsills dusted and the chairs arranged in a friendly fashion? Does the living room invite a warm conversation? Is your house, as in the place where you live, in your heart and in your mind, does it represent the Lord and you well? What would God think if he were to show up at your house, knocking on the door politely? Would you ask him in or tell him to wait a moment, leaving him to listen at the door while you went scurrying around, frantically picking up, cleaning up, and hiding unmentionables, as if he doesn't already know the condition of our living spaces, which only we see? Or maybe some of us would even speak to him through the door, asking him to schedule an appointment next time because today's visitation was very inconvenient. Would you be willing to miss the day of your visitation simply because you felt your house was not situated well? There is a great deal to consider when thinking about where you live. The details are always important and always matter. There's the structure, organization, the food preparation area and sleeping quarters, clothing storage, and the family relationships within your home, both physical, spiritual, and metaphorical too. Those are all things which describe where we live. Is that concept too large for now? If so, just focus on only one space, setting things aright. All that remodeling isn't about trying to get God to be pleased with you. It's about having faith and believing God is already pleased with you, and you can't manage your image to make it all simply look better. How you live in your heart before the Lord is evident in how you keep your house. Do you mind people coming to visit, or are you embarrassed for anyone to walk in? Remember, it's not about creating a seemingly sterile atmosphere. After all, you live there, and to me, living spaces are supposed to look lived in. We're not building a stage prop. We're building reality. For some, I believe if we could walk through the place they live in their hearts, maybe what we would see would be a bare-bones existence, just the simple basic human needs of food, shelter, and clothing. Or maybe we would walk through beautiful forests, sit on royal porches with a view, lavishing in all their beautiful greenery and flowers of their radiant God heart. I had a dream about a stern man I used to know, or maybe a better word other than stern would be stringent. In the dream, he lived in a concrete block house with concrete floors. There was no grass around the house, and the roof was just flat and stark. There were strictly functional flat windows with no adornments, The furniture was sparse, and the doors were hung like vault doors. In the dream, he was always sternly staring at me like I was an intruder who had a lot of nerve to be inside his house. Indeed, as time went by, the more I knew about him, that's exactly how he lived. The dream wasn't only about him, but also about me. And again, the Lord challenged me by asking, "How do you see where you live?" Many might see the place where they live as a daily downward spiral of beggary and indigence, a poverty-stricken faint smudge on a clean wall. Is that how we think God sees us? But is that really how it is? Or is that just the view of your house through the eyes of some old religious dogma? Did you know that the very first letter of the Bible is the Hebrew letter Beit, which is symbolic of the house? And in this case, it's a little oversized, so initially, it is understood that the very important first letter points to the story of God's house. But what about where you live? Is it situated with compassion and mercy, which is the overarching attitude in how you relate to the world around where you live? Or does your house ooze a feeling that says, "Someone owes me," because you're waiting for someone to pay you to have compassion? A description of God's house can be seen in Psalm 48, 1-3. God's house is set up on top of the mountain of His holiness. And verse 2 says God's house is situated beautifully, the joy of the whole earth. And you? Is your house a refuge? Do you feel others should exercise their hospitality? But for you, becoming a refuge is just too expensive, with not enough emotional capital to be a refuge for those in need of emotional, spiritual, or moral shelter. Being a refuge requires knowing Jesus, knowing yourself, and having good boundaries, and those come with time and trial to make them firm in our hearts. Is love part of your house as the foundation and structure? Our attitudes or heart posture are part of where we live, being like Jesus and having a heart for the poor. And poor doesn't necessarily mean people who don't have stuff or food. There is moral and ethical poverty in this world as well. I've got in front of me some common excuses for not helping the poor, and these attitudes are part of the description of where we live. I've drawn them from my own situation, so they're largely about me. But if you can relate, then so be it. We say, "They don't deserve help. They got themselves into poverty. Let them get themselves out." Well, that one certainly lets me out of having to participate, doesn't it? Some would say God's call to help the poor applies to another time, just any other time but now, right? How convenient for me. Maybe we'd say, we don't know any poor people. Or we brush them off saying, I have my own needs. You know, I've discovered I might do just about anything to keep from soiling my clean hands on the have-nots. Maybe we have walls built of self-centeredness, like, any money I give will be wasted, stolen, or spent on other things. The poor will never see it. Now, you know, I don't actually know that, and I can't be responsible for what they do with the donation. But I can be responsible to God to do as He asked me to. How about I may become a victim myself? Am I going to live in fear of what might happen or trust God for what will happen? How about I don't know where to start in order to help the poor, and I don't have time? Oh, yes, we're so busy, busy, busy. Haven't got time to return those text messages. Haven't got time to answer that phone. And the excuse is busy, busy, busy. I'm busy. Forgetting that, if we're all that busy, something is wrong. And we need to remember we are the ones who said yes. Then there's the martyred thinking.
My little bit won't make any difference.
Another convenient escape from being involved, but yet still maintaining control so I don't have to actually give of myself. You may think I'm being mean, but hey, I'm just being honest about my motivations. The real question is, can you relate to any of that? Instead of making lame excuses, which certainly colors and defines where we live, let us be wise builders and take the words of Jesus seriously, putting them into action. Matthew 7:24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. 1 Corinthians 3:10. According to the grace of God which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation. But let each one take heed how he builds on it. Where do you live? If we stood in front of God's house, where He lives, what do you think we would see? To you, would it be so immense, so high and so wide that we couldn't relate to what we see in terms of space and time? Would it be a quaint country cottage set at the edge of the woods, or a burned-out building in a large, lost city? Maybe none of that. Or maybe all of that. How do you see it in your mind if you were to try and imagine? I believe we would see a house, as is illustrated by Jesus, as a symphony of triumph. His house sings and its borders are defined by righteousness. The song of His heart is permeated in the very structure And as the notes of his song flow upward, they sing of rising and would be the rising themselves, the essence and form of upward motion. God's house is a sound burst of sound compelling us to break out of hiding and be open and transparent. In God's house is the freedom of release and the tension of purpose. We are given understanding that being in His presence sweeps spaces clean, leaving nothing but the joy of an unobstructed vision of His love, and in all the dimensions of His goodness is a vision and song sung in joyful, laughing astonishment at the revelation of who He is. His house sings the song of an amazing deliverance which drives the enemy backwards into his own gates. That's the way I believe our house is supposed to look and feel, and I fully believe through the blood of the Son, it can become and be exactly as He is. Our house, where we live, should be a special place where right and good memories are made. We are no small influence in the neighborhood, you know. Just the thought of where we live should inspire a vision, the way one woman described her house. Of all days swimming, late-night cookouts, sleepovers, cars in the driveway, bikes at the ready, sunny mornings filled with giggles and shady afternoons under a tree with a book. Our house is what I call our shalom place. It is under the peace of God, no matter the chaos of the world around us. God has made me to be beautiful, and I am like where I live. God has made my backyard to have lots of green under old hardwoods and pine trees. With air so good, it's an honor to be allowed to breathe. Every day from my house is beautiful and inviting, with beautiful sunsets every night, and the upward sound of peace and a refuge from a raging and chaotic world. Think about it. In John 1:38-40, two of the disciples followed Jesus after John had baptized them. Jesus, knowing they were following Him, turned and asked them, "What do you guys want?" They replied,
"Where do you live?"
Like suddenly, they couldn't think of anything else to ask. But I believe it was the perfect question. Then Jesus followed their question with an invitation. He said,
"Come on, go with me and see."
Basically saying, "Come on over to my house and hang out." I believe God is inviting us to come on over to His house, to take note of how His house is situated and for us to position where we live in similar fashion. The two disciples stayed with Jesus till late. In my imagination, took notes of how the Son of God had His place arranged. Maybe Jesus offered them some snacks, played football in the backyard, then talked and laughed with God till, well, after the sun went down. What a day, huh? Yeah, that was the day that Tony said, "Where do you live?" And that was the day God said, "Come and see." And that was the day my friend Danielle followed Jesus home. And that was the day Jesus said, "Come on over to my house. Come on over and see. Come on over to my house and hang around with me. We'll go through the refrigerator and through the cupboards there. We'll laugh and talk, sing and dance forever." Yeah, boy howdy, what a day that will be. I'm Social Porter, and this has been Outposts, a semi-live broadcast of cool jazz and contemplative conversation, brought to you by Living in His Name Ministries, good old Eddie down at Area 22 Guitars. It's the home of brilliant creativity and dynamic forward thinking. The Mebane Freedom League, McDowell Electric, Paul over at International Tile, and of course, Jeff and Karen at Trinity Bakers, where there's always something good in the oven. Music was by Mommy and Me, Plaz Johnson, Mitchell Foreman, and the Allen Broadbent Trio. All music use is licensed by BMI. Where do you live? Does your house represent God and yourself well? Or are you embarrassed about it? Jesus has extended us His vision of possibilities. So let's share in His vision and create some common ground between ourselves and God. And that's something worth considering. Pray for each other. Learn to hear the heart of those around you. And don't write off those who have wandered away too quickly. God just might surprise you. Take care and consider well all your words, my friend, and I'll talk to you next time. Amen. Yeah.